Hello, my name is Dimitri Fontaine, and I'm going to talk about my experience of running production systems with Landeste. I maybe should have titled the talk Multimaster with Landeste, because as you will see, it looks a little like that. So what we're going to talk about, I will give you some context about where I use Landeste. So I will present the iMedia's activity that are solved by this replication system. We have three different projects, so I'll try to not mix it up for you to follow. For the context bits, I will present the toolset we use in production and to show you how SkyTools fits very well with our environment. We will talk about the three different projects uses of the replication systems, and we will try to have some conclusion about it. So what we do at iMedia, we have different businesses, and the three most important are those ones. So the payments, it's like you want to access a document on the internet, and the website offering the document wants you to pay. They have a host of solutions to do that, and we offer them one solution. So there are, like you see, monthly about 8 million transactions of payments on our systems on a host of very different websites. And we do one of the payment solutions is calling by phone. That means you get to call a service number, which is more expensive than a normal call, so it gets your money. And just from staying, say, 1 minute and a half on the phone, they are billing you €2, from which the website gets €1 or something like that. Okay, so if you're a student, for example, and you're too young to have a credit card to use on the internet, you can steal your parents' phone and still be able to pay to access to the documents. So it works very well, as far as we are concerned. And the other service that we do is advertising. So we have both internal websites, and we are providing advertisement for other people too. So the second point is advertising with 4 million page seen a month. And we've been joining with some other companies. So we know that we will have 5 times this load by the end of the year. And we're already up to 4,000 transactions a second globally on this system. And interactive call services are what I just talked about with young people getting their parents' phone to pay. To run all those services, we only use open source stuff. So that's the usual stuff you always hear about in open source conferences. And the point to highlight here is that we depend as much on PostgreSQL itself as on the contribution and extensions we can find to solve our problems thanks to the PostgreSQL extensibility. On PostgreSQL itself, we're running in production from 8.2 to 8.4. We got rid of the last 8.1 not too long ago. And so we're using SkyTools, all of them are about. So that's PGQ on this day, Wall Manager for wall shipping, PL Proxy for... we're not yet using PL Proxy for sharding. We're using it basically as a remote procedure call. And we'll see later in some kind of replication too. It's a good transport mechanism. And we use pgbuncer everywhere. We use prefix branch, which is a data type we made for solving the telephone routing indexing. So you have a telephone number, you have a table with all the carrier prefixes, and you want to know very quickly by which carrier did the guy phone to your system, because some carrier will won't give you the money. So you don't want to take the call if it's from this carrier. And the lookup has to be very fast because the guy is waiting on the phone before you answer him. So we did the GIST indexing for that. We're using Jeff Davies' temporal extension and all the things you see that. So you see we are using quite a lot of different extensions we can find on PGFoundry or... yes, they're all on PGFoundry, I think. And we had to backpatch UUID to 8.22. One other tool that we use a lot is PGFwin. If you don't yet use that, maybe you should see what it has to offer. What it does is parsing the log files of PostgreSQL and produce nice HTML reports. And what it does too is separate the errors it got in the logs. So you can script it for sending emails each night with a summary of the errors you got in production. Then you forward the mail to the developers. And it does in the main reports, it will show you all the queries that are using your CPU time. And it does cumulative CPU usage. So if you have one quite fast query, but running thousands of time a day, and cumulatively it takes a lot of the load of the server, you know that maybe you should optimize this quite fast query before this reporting query that runs only twice a day. So with PGFwin, you don't have to guess anymore. Okay, so that was more for the context than Landiste, but we'll get there. We have about 50 production databases, so in different clusters in the replication term. So one project with 30 databases in a kind of multi-master replication system. We are using the database volume are anywhere from non-significant to 1.5 terabytes. And most of the databases are using transactional processing, but some other ones are doing only reporting or aggregation. So, and we will see that thanks to Landist and SkyTools, in fact, what happens is that we have the transactional databases in front servers that are feeding their data, their log data, to a centralized database that we use for analytics processing. And we do all that using only distribution packages. So all of that is Debian packaged in our case. All the things I just told about we are only two DBAs to care about them. So we have like 30 nodes in the same replication cluster and other projects with such needs. And we can manage them by being only two on call. And thanks to SkyTools and Landiste, it just works and we managed to get to sleep. Even if we only two. So what we do, the two of us, is manage the production, help the developers into making it so that it will run when in production, because often enough, the developers have good ideas, but that will not match the production needs in terms of service quality. But they're not the one on call when it fails on production, so they don't always realize some of the constraints, so we're there to help. And we also contribute back to the community the things that we enhance or the new tool that we're making to ease the maintenance of all those systems. We're monitoring all of that with Minin and Nagios. And for example, this graphic is about wall shipping with Wall Manager, which is one of the SkyTools products. So what we monitor is Here is the timestamp difference between the last checkpoint on the slave and on the master, and the average time between the production and two wall files on the master. So with that, it's hard to see how having only those two things help monitoring the health of the production system in theory, but in practice, when the curves get higher than usual, you have a real problem. So it's trustworthy for us. This graphic is to show you the activity of one of our front servers. So it's doing, in average, 1,000 inserts a second. And yeah, it's the Jan is saying that the curve is not flat at all.
Well, there are quite some spikes in
it. Yeah, so what happens is that the tracker servers are publishing information that are not coming from a replication stream yet. So we're using the old method of having a truncate, replace the data, and live again.
Oh,
so those peaks...
So you truncate the tables and then refill them.
Exactly. Because it's a 10-year-old system that we inherited, and that's not a problem we have yet found the time to fix. So it will change, but that explains the strange curve. But the point is that with this this load is not a problem for us to use when we this is the source of our replication, and PGQ and Landiste is very fine with this kind of load. And we measure the that's on the same server. We have it's a provider, so we have a queue running there, and this is measuring the lag of the queue. So many times happens between the generation of events on the master and the replay on the slave. We have two slaves, so that are called SP1 and SP2. That makes some sense in our case, but I won't explain it all. So SP1 and SP2 are the servers that are getting the data, two of them. And we can see that the average lag is under 3 seconds. And that 3 seconds is a setup parameter. So in case we will need a more aggressive setup, we are able still to reduce the average lag. We also see that there has been a huge lag at some point in the past, you see, in the middle of the screen. That was because SP2 was not yet considered running in production. It had a failure that we didn't see because Nagios was configured to have it in maintenance, and so it took us some time to realize that and have it live again. So the queue filled up, then we added it live again, and the lag was if you see the higher point in the curve and the distance it makes to get back with the others is the time it took for the servers went back online again to have a lag which is acceptable. So it was very quick. And that is the load we have on the federating server. We have several trackers. So this activity is from one of the front servers. But we are replicating more of one of them this way to a central server. So the load it's taking is like, in average, more than 3,000 inserts a second. And that is on the specific day I took the graph on. But depending on the day, you can have much more or much less. And again, there are some strange peaks. But that's still related to when we add the server offline, then online again, and it has to replay all the missing events. So there have been quite a lot of activity, which is not usual. And it raised to, like we see, 56,000 inserts a second to be able to get back again in a good position. So the what to see there, the important part is that usually it works well. When it does not, it's often an hardware failure, but it's easy to recover. And in any case, when you see that we had a big lag, and then we're able to catch up quickly, we didn't lose any event because PGQ is transactional. A question was asked this morning in the replication panel, that is, what is the impact of having this replication system on my production servers? And Jan has a quite detailed answer, but my answer to that is that we're unable to measure it. So the those are the typical performance of our servers, performance characteristics of our servers. And with or without the replication and the queuing, we have about the same. So as far as our use of Londist is concerned, we're not having production problem with it. So that are the performance characteristics we typically have for the advertisement platform. So it's 6 milliseconds to serve the advert URL you want to serve. We have, in average, 300 adverts served each second. And all this activity on several servers get all back to the same statistic aggregating server. And in average, it takes 3 seconds between the time we display an advert to the time we have the aggregation server, the data on the aggregation server, sorry. And in this aggregation server, we are materializing the data that comes from all the production servers to make some statistics and views that concern all the system. That runs every 5 minutes, and that keeps up with the load. Before that, we used to use Oracle on the central server and MySQL on the frontal servers. And the procedure I talked about later for getting the data out of the central, which was Oracle, to MySQL, took like 6 hours. So if you were changing data on the back office, and then you want to reload the web page to see if the new campaign is active, it was 6 hours. So it's no longer the case. It's it's by choice around an hour. Yeah?
How large are those databases, and how large is the hardware you're running them on?
Hardware is quite not that expensive Dell machines. So the current, we're beginning to max out the hardware here. But as of those numbers are concerned, we have the frontal servers are like one U Dell servers with 2 disks and 8 gigs RAM. And the servers that gets this one, which gets all the load, is like 10 disks, 5 units Dell machine, which cost, public cost is like 50,000 euros.
How big are those databases on disk?
On disk, on the trackers, it fits in RAM by design. If it were not the case, we would add some RAM. And on the materialization, on the central server, which gets all the data, it's between 500 gigs and 1.5 terabytes, depending on how many days we want to keep in case of forensic analysis. The other project is the micropayment facility. It is much more simple. We used to have a single web server and a single database server serving it all. And we consider that for a robustness perspective, we want to separate the payment itself with the back office on the other side. The trick is that to be able to serve a payment, you have to know which documents on which sites are configured for the user to access and to pay for. So you need the back office information into the payment system. And once the payment is done, the user will log into his back office and will want to see his statistics updated with the payment. So we need the payment back to the back office. And so it's cross-replication. So it looks a lot like Multimaster. The only thing different with Multimaster is that every server is a master, but not for the same table. If you take one table at a time, there is only one master. But if you take the overall picture, there is more than one master in the same replication set. That's the trick. So we were talking about performance. The only slow queries we have in the system are the backups. So that's fine. And again, the typical performance we have does not depend on whether the replication is activated or not. And I will be a little faster here because it's about the same ideas but with yet another different system. So let me show you some graphics because we're all getting lost there. So here is the first application we're talking about, which is the telephony system. So we have the colors are not great. I don't know if I can. No, there's not a chance over there. The big one on the upper side is the centralized server, is a back office. So user and administrators will, on the back office, set up their services. So for example, this phone number has to be served by this application with this kind of cost, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we have 30 services under it that are serving the phone calls. But each time the user hung up the phone, the data, what we call the CDR, call detail record, is sent back to the central, which will get the data, run triggers on it to compute the costs, and update the statistics. So the mean time between hang up and statistic update with the cost computed is around 3 seconds, which is the longest lag. And we use peer proxy, as I said, for RPC, because we have some phone services where, for example, the 50 call will win whatever. So you want to be able, if the service is successful, you will have loads of calls. So you want to be able to take the calls on different machines, but you want only one winner. So we solve this problem with having the winning decision made on the central server by means of peer proxy. So this way there is only one winner. But we can serve the calls on as many servers as we want. The second system is the simpler. It's the one with the payment on one side, on your right, and back office on your left. And we have Londista to replicate most of the data between the two systems. But we also have some PHP processing of the online payment that will compute some affiliations, costs, extra, some business logic that are taken from the transaction system and injected into the back office. We used to have only one system, so it was done directly by the payment web server before to get to the database. But when we separated, we thought that maybe we want the payment server to be as reliable and fast as possible, so we offload this processing from it. And we offload it by means of PGQ, which allows us to run our own consumer clients that will run our old PHP code on the transactions. So the PGQ daemons in the bottom of the screen will take all the transactions that have been made on the payment system. They will compute the business logic that historically has always existed in PHP. So we have the PHP library to talk to PGQ. And the result is sent into the backend. Before we had that, it happened a lot that there is a... We had a, if you want, first system was all the computing into the web service. Second system was some kind of daemon, but not PGQ based. And the current system is with PGQ. And we went from the second to the current because with a classic PHP daemon, if you stop it, for example, to fix a bug, or if it crashes because it has a bug, you lose some event processing. It's hard to be sure where to get back in the stream of events of the payment system. Or you can do it, but you no longer have any performance. And the way to solve it is to use PGQ. So you have transactional characteristics and the performance. So. And the third application we've been talking about is the advertising. And that's where there is a second step in the architecture. So on the top, unfortunately, I don't think you can read what is written in the boxes. So next time I'll pick some other colors. I didn't realize. So on the top, you have the central server where all the users will set up which advertisement campaigns to run on the traffic servers, which are on the bottom of the slide. And that's where we are not yet using LandiState to send the information. We have some custom scripts, and we have problems with them, so next step is to use LandiState there. And the bottom servers, this line, are the advertising one, so they are accumulating some logs. They have insert-only tables. They're appending all they do in there. And we want some statistics from that. We used to compute the statistics directly in some PHP scripts and inject them into the central back-office server. And we've been reaching scalability problems. So what we do now is to have an intermediate level. Those two boxes in the middle are PostgreSQL servers that are getting all the production data thanks to Landist. And they're running every 5 minutes a script which calls a PGPLSQL function that will reconciliate all the data from all the server and basically compute a materialized view. And then on top of this materialized view, we expose the data through PL proxy. So in the central server, each hour, we will run a PL proxy function, which will do a view on our material, on our aggregates, get the result back, and record them into the central server. So for the user, the application users, they will either be coding the tracking service, so they will connect only to the tracking database, or they will work on the statistics, back office, and the setup, and they will connect only to the central database. All the data flow is controlled by means of Landiste and PL proxy, and the developers don't have to care about that. And this makes the systems very responsive and robust. Any question on those three different architectures, or I just continue? So to summarize a little, we use the Skype tool suite, and this suite is giving us replication with Londist, queuing with PGQ, and we use that for custom batches. And we use that also in Londist, but it's almost transparent. We're using Wall Manager, which is doing our wall shipping, because when you see that, the central server, you want a backup for failover, and you're not going to use any of the Rondiste replication that are in this schema for that. So the central server, we have another one which is maintained by means of wall shipping in case of failure. And this wall shipping is done thanks to Wall Manager. We use pgbouncer all over the place, which means that each time an application wants to connect to PostgreSQL, there is pgbouncer in the middle. Yeah?
You mentioned earlier that you use PGQ along with PHP.
Yeah.
I didn't quite catch how you were doing
that. I've published a libphp-pgq, which is on GitHub. And one of the really good things about PGQ is that all the logic it does, all the code of PGQ, is in procedure functions. So you can build whatever client you want to atop PGQ as long as you're able to connect to the database and run some stored procedures. So SkyTools comes with a richer client for that on which Londist is based, but it's in Python. And in our case, we had this old 10-year-old business logic implemented in PHP. And the customers, their use of the bugs we have. If we change the bugs, they won't be happy. So we have to keep PHP there. But thanks to PGQ, it's quite easy to do. So it's like maybe I have 500 lines of code of PHP, and then I have PGQ from any PHP application. I've heard about some people doing some PGQ consumers in PLPGSQL too. So they have a cron job that calls the procedure and that will consume all the events accumulated so far. So if you want PGQ but you don't want Python, it's really easy to get there. And we use also another question, or is the answer okay for you? Yeah. And we also use PLProxy as an RPC service. It's not exactly meant to be that, but it works very well in this fashion. And we used it also as an alternative transport mechanism for Londiste in some cases, because we have it's in there, in the servers in the middle. We aggregate the data each and every 5 minutes, and we want the aggregation to be available on the back office atop each hour. So what happens with Londiste is that each hour it has a huge number of batches of events. It has 1 hour lag to catch up every hour. And we found out that it does that fairly well in like between 5 and 10 minutes, depending on the rest of the system activities. But if we use PLProxy instead, it does that each time in 2 minutes. So we send a PLProxy function and we get back the result, and that's the same as if we had been catching up 1 hour of lag. So it's kind of a stretch, but it works fairly well. And so I promised to talk about what happens when you run Londiste in production, and I gave you a lot of context, and finally we're there. So what happens is that globally it works very well. And sometimes there is a break somewhere, obviously. It always happens. To us, it happened mainly when we do administration error, because Londiste works very fine, but won't help you to avoid shoot you in the foot. So if you want to, you really, really, you just do it. But the nice thing about it is that once you've shoot in the foot, it's easy to get on with that. So for example, the spikes we had on the curves previously, we had a problem with a server that was not meant yet to be monitored, but finally we learned on the Monday that, in fact, it was to be considered in production. Okay, and it broke in the weekend. So we have 2 days of lag, and we're talking about average 300 transactions a second on 8 different servers. So we have 8 queues filled with 400 millions of events, and we have to catch up the lag. It took 12 hours. So that's kind of a worst case scenario. And the usual scenario we have is that Nagios or Menin will alert us that the lag is getting high. So this time we didn't get to see it, so it's the worst case, and it took half a day to catch up. Usually we see it happening, we fix the problem, which often enough is you add a column on the master and you forgot to add it on the subscriber. Okay, you shoot yourself in the foot, you want it to, you do it. So the replication stops, the lag fills, you see it, you add the column on the subscribers, and the lag is back to normal. So if you want to avoid it, the long distance error is have a better quality assurance team. That's it. We had this strange problem with the ICAP. We have 15 seconds where the application developers were having problems in their log, where sometimes they're doing a single select, and it took 50 seconds. And we finally tracked down the problem, and the problem was that PGQ uses 3 tables to handle the events, and from time to time it will truncate a table and use it again for filling up events. That's the best you can do, because if you want to delete the old events, then you have vacuum problems. So for performance, 3 tables and truncate, it's much better. But when truncating the queue table and you have huge transaction rate, or huge depending on the server capacities, of course. So our hardware is not able to do the truncate and to guarantee the service at the same time. So we found out that, and it happened that this 15-second hiccup was just at the end of the 12 hours catch-up, you know. So it happened once. We were yet to see it again, but it was like 2 days of searching everywhere before we realized that it just coincided with the end of the catching up. So it was 40 million events truncated with a lot of... basically the system load overall was twice as what it is normally. And all we got from that is a 15-second hiccups. So I said it more than once already, but all the problems, or about all the problems I had with long distance prediction, are you shoot yourself in the foot. And you have no help from long distance to for this not to happening. Instead, what you have is a trustworthy behavior when it happens. So when you shoot yourself in the foot, long list stop replicating and waits for you to fix the problem. So you don't lose events, and as soon as you're able to fix your problem, long list is happy again, and you too. Okay, the question earlier is answered on this slide, so I will skip it. And so we're reaching the conclusion now. So what happens in our case is that we have mainly 3 different projects used in production, using anywhere between 5 and 40 database servers per project in production, with very different needs. But so the needs are separating the application layers. Remember the graphics with one part in the left and one part on the right and PGQ in the bottom, that's that. Federating some logs and offloading the processing. So that's the design with one server on the top, two on the middle, and 14 on the bottom. In lots of cases, what we want to do is manage the back office in only one place. So the application updates data on one database, and you have all the production systems that are fetching this data and have a local copy of it, so that if the network breaks, the production system still works. The user can still update the setup, and when the network is working again, the missing information flows to the production systems. So it's a network glitch tolerant. And that's a common need. Another need is materializing data, statistics, from what happens on more than one server at a time. And the last need we have with respect to replication, as we saw, is the failover. And for that, we use Wall Manager, which is based on point-in-time recovery in Postgres. And so overall, with all those solutions, what happens is that we are only two DBAs, so we're on call for 1 week, then the other, you know. And it will be 1 year and a half soon, and we've been woken up like 10 times each with all of the solutions deployed. So if you see me tired, that's not because I'm running SkyTools. It's hello, kids. So an important conclusion I wanted to draw on all this is that what is amazing in all these possibilities that we have is that they all comes from this community you've been hearing about. And for those of you who are not in the community for a long time, who are joining in PGCon to discover it, the community is great, really. So it's producing a lot of different solutions to the problem you might have. And if there is no solution already existing, being part of the community is really easy. You just come and say, here is my problem and the solution, I think about it. And you begin to talk with people. And more often than not, you are proposing the solution. So you are doing the code to implement the solution. But it's really easy and quick to become part of the community. And what I found is that the people in this community are really prepared for a warm welcome of newcomers. So for those of you hesitating to jump in, just do. Okay. So this is it. So if you have some question. Yeah? Not yet. I have asked the Skype teams to include PGQ cooperative consumers into that. So I'm due to make it to finish the work. But so I'm due to use SkyTool 3 soon. My main usage of it will be to have PGQ daemons sharing the processing of the queue. Because as of now, with PGQ, if you have more than one consumer, you're supposed to be wanting to do replication, so all the consumer will see the same set of events. And what I would like from PGQ to offer me is that if I have two consumers, they see each half of the events, so that I spread the load. So that's what I'm waiting SkyTool 3 for, which is not what usually people want it for. Any other question? No. Okay, there it is. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The only thing you do have to be careful of is if you do a drop column, you want to do that on the provider before the subscriber.
I prefer the trigger. You said put your box on the then go to sleep or then.
Yeah. So what we normally do is our normal process is we push stuff to our slaves first. And then once that's happy, then we push to the master. Works great. The only issue that we've had is that you do have to remember on the provider to refresh the trigger. There is a loan dysfunction if that's
actually, there's new triggers you will need to do.
Yeah.
But I don't remember if they are dead people or not. But we have those new triggers that are automatically refresh.
Oh, is that in Schedules 2 as well?
They are actually already on Schedules 2 also.
Oh.
Yeah, but I didn't get to use it because it's very recent, and I didn't replace the trigger.
Yes.
So it's the old trigger. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So my problem that I don't know how to deal with yet is, and I haven't got to it yet, we have to use Jira.
Yeah.
There's tools like Jira that have their own database structure. When you upgrade, they do DDL changes. And we want to do reporting based on this, so we want to feed it into the data warehouse. And I'm trying to figure out what the best way of getting that data is, even though the DDL is updated by the tool.
If you can take an outage on your provider, then what should just work is outage on the provider, put all the triggers back on.
So you were talking about your DDL changes have to be called on the slaves separately.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, you do it yourself.
Okay.
Maybe I pushed some button.
And you do those changes. You do the upgrade.
Yeah, you did. So the trick there is that you've essentially broken replication as part of that.
Ta-da.
So
thank you.
Whatever.
Shut down access.
So, like if I did it to the master and I ran a update script or whatever, some maintenance, schedule maintenance, change to DDL. It doesn't filter out.
You have to figure it out yourself. And if you add a column, you add it on the slaves.
Yeah, first.
But the slaves don't care. So you add the column and nothing happens.
There is
just a new column with no data in there.
Okay.
And when all the slaves are happy, you add it on the master.
Okay, so that
and now the data flows.
That's
the slaves. That's it. If you delete a column, you drop it first on the master. There is no more. You wait for. That's the tricky part. You delete it. You drop the column on the master. You ensure that all the events with this column in there are already on the slaves, and then you drop the column on the slaves.
So let's go ahead and I'll use the typical worst case scenario for DDL. That is, I'm updating. I'm adding a new column that can't be null.
Yeah.
But obviously, I can't just, you know, can't make a new column and add null.
Yeah. So
do I add in?
If it's not new, you have to have a default value.
Yeah. All right, so you'd have to, I'm just trying to figure out the process. So the first thing I would do is go in.
You add the column on the subscribers with a default value.
Okay.
So that means stable rewrites. But that if you want that, you have it. And when it's there on the subscriber, you add the column on the master.
So after?
Once the subscriber already found.
You still have to add the default value in the master as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the default value will not be in the replication because it's not an update. It's an alter table. There is no trigger on that, so it's not replicated. But it's the same default, so you know they are in sync. Basically, you're on your own, but most of the problems are easy to solve.
So let's say that...
Will we join this?
Sorry.
Come along, they're talking about the same things.
Okay.
That's like the most complicated case. The case of the app is central. Just adding the subscribers first. And
you can take the outage and some of things get
caught. I can take the outage. So
take the outage.
The easiest thing is always to take the outage. But if you know, because for us, it's very difficult to take an outage.
Yeah. But I didn't know that I didn't have to redo the homework.
Yeah, no, you don't have to.
I do this offsite. It just takes like 5 minutes.
Sometimes you need to shut down traffic for a couple of seconds until it catches up to stay in your place.
So the queue is pretty dynamic.
And if you have fucked up, you can actually edit the events in the queue.
You can push it off. Is there a function just to recreate a trigger? Or is it actually?
Yes, there is a function. If you still trigger, you can boost. What is the reference? It's based trigger. I do something like that. It's actually that you really need to do it.
Okay.
Same thing with updates.
Because now I installed it again. I drop all the trigger and reinstall it. It's not a script.
You want to do recording on all like aggregate.
So the other thing you can do is that you can there's transmutations you can do with it. That's like
you said you only replicate from a view, right?
Is that correct?
You pull some. How do you pull the data from a view? Is that using Longest or that's using just a regular overview?
Five minutes, I have scripts that go on all those
So I have trigger take all those data back to a single table. So for long list, it's 14 table, but I have triggers that runs just after the long list insert, and that will generate all the 14 tables into only one. And on this table, each 5 minutes, I have data that goes and runs materialization process.
Okay.
So
now
there's another table.
They are exactly for those injections in the table.
Yeah. But I forgot about the right instance, so I just did it this way. You know, because all the servers names are like TR1, TR2, TR3. So I have a schema named like the server on each server, and it's the default schema on the search pass. And so that's all, I can all replicate directly to another server.
Something I want to add on to this is the ability to say, put this in a different schema.
Yeah.
And when it's coming from here, put it over here.
Yeah. And this has the ability to have one table, a subscriber, and the default table.
They're the only ones.
You have a few.
Well, you can actually do that now.
Yeah, but you have to write the consumer or use another consumer that I'm not using.
Common data.
You would have to be pulling from different queues, so that it's different processes. But I don't know that it's going to be able to do that.
In this case,
now, of course, not having any violation and stuff. That's all.
What I do is for this, you can see that my priority is on the event table, are composed of the server number and the serial.
Yeah.
So there are many among the systems. So when we have a program with one event, from which server it came.
Yeah. So something that you'll be interested in, we are a second environment here.
Well, the point is, do those servers modify that?
So one of the parts of that is that
you have no columns.
It will.
That's what the sequences.
It will be able to manage sequences. So that
although you are saying that they do insert.
Yeah. So these are allocated. Yeah, so that's the intention is to set it up so that each provider, you say,
but
okay, you have this range.
You have no problem.
Yeah,
and if they don't touch that data, then
you say, okay, each server.
I thought about using that
all
because
rights
when you create the sequence, it's easy to say that the sequence goes from this.
All
rights
are going to register all the
records. So it's kind of like that already.
Yeah.
But I was so afraid to figure that. Like, you have a new server.
So the other thing that you can do is you can say increment by 10 servers, you increment by 10.
Yeah,
but then when you want to add number 11, it's like, no.
That's a reminder of programming in magic with the line of speed.
10, 20, 30,
15.
Yeah, people learn very quick policy by at least 10.
Yeah.
Until your program gets
a good but there's a problem that it doesn't do cascading. So this will be a new monster, and basically you cannot do statements. No, it's not the master.
No,
it's more simple. It simply means there is no cascading. You need to not take some care. Basically, after you have done it, there is no problem. But the problem is if you do a new full async into here, you want to refresh the data, you fucked up something. Then you need to also unregister here then for that. Because otherwise this trigger will launch here. But on the other hand, in Scratch, we have only fixed that, so they can, they have all of them have the tied to this one queue that flows through the cascaded.
Really, this is being up here,
and they found out that's
I have
performance.
Three subscribers to the same.
Trying to deal with those
deletions. Oh, actually, no, no.
So what?
In Scratch, you can do exactly that. That those are subscribed here, but it's probably simpler to subscribe them here.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can do it, and we actually are doing, but you need to do some manual work. So it's not.
Is this maybe a better way of that?
Maybe.
There is a particular process.
That made it easier at it's quite a speed. Because otherwise you need to be careful there.
So if you have only one of the three levels,
this is my problem. The way I'm doing it right now, I've got this database, and I've got common data. So
The point is, it's very simple. It is table to table replication and a master and slave. And that's it. If you want to some hierarchy, you need to do this again. This new master and slave.
I've got 20%
below. So it's you have one master and several slaves.
Well, except
it doesn't
serve
as scaling. You
have
to stack the slaves on each other.
But
yeah.
We have solved this with Scratch 3, but you need to be prepared. It's not a production system yet, so there may be bugs. But
I can work with you on
that. That would be really nice.
How far out?
That part actually works. It's just maybe not tested enough. It's supposed to actually work already. But we are doing some new development in some other areas, so there may be some changes coming up. But it's not really difficult. This is something.
That's the point.
One thing you could even do is.
Sure, it's a simple
matter. Okay, I don't know if Mark is going to, but as Dimitri said, I think he. But actually, we have some materials to use that don't contain this table on slave.
Yeah,
actually, there is a special module that treats all these events from PGQ, and it generates the aggregation internally, and only just aggregation to the table. It is not done by triggers. But this depends on what you are aggregating on. Maybe triggers is okay.
We show you sometimes on email. So show you our logical break
for us. It might actually be. By the way, that's a good idea.
Like, I've been told,
if you have money, you want something fixed, you say, here's my money, fix it.
Does anybody have a spare DVI to VGA cable for a Mac?
Yes.
Because otherwise I'll do it on the internet. So I forgot to bring my...
I was.
That doesn't do it. I'm the older generation.
Do you need a dongle? I've got one for you.
Do you?
Sure.
That'd be great.
Oh, did you sign this already?
No, but I will sign it now without a problem. What day is today? 20th?
28th, first.
Jim has it for you.
Thank you, Jim.
It is a little wonky. If you don't have it in exactly the right position, the red starts flaking out, You just need to be careful.
Well, I think I'll probably keep it in one place until I get very excited and start jumping up and down at the end of the friezo. Thanks, Jim. How do you go?
Dimitri, I just was asking some questions.
Got it. Whoa, what am I doing?